Hey, welcome back, everybody. We are here on a Monday. It's feeling like Monday, isn't it? Did everybody have a good weekend? I had a really good weekend, and my wife tells me I cannot make any comments about the officiating at the high school games that I've been to lately. I'll just say this. I hate it when a high school game is basically decided by the officials, not by the players out there. You can see equanimity in how a game is called based on the number of penalty yards each team gets, because I mean, you can call penalty probably on every single play if you really wanted to, but it's a question of whether it has anything to do with whether the play that which was penalized had anything to do with whether the play was going in that direction or not, I do not like it. I don't like it in high school football. I don't like it in college football. I don't like it when I was watching the pros. I don't watch the pros anymore. But I just don't like it when the plays are called incorrectly. And I realize at each level, you have a different level of expertise in those officials. But I just hate it when that happens. I just hate it when that happens. The outcome of some games don't reflect actually who really won it. So, and that'll get me in trouble probably. Let's see. So we were talking about some of the different positions, and I was explaining my reasoning behind people voting for Vince Fong for not only the state assembly, District 32 and District 20, but what my rationale is behind that. When Vince Fong decided that he was going to go ahead and run for the congressional, there was a question as to whether he legally could do it or not. And it seems that the Secretary of State decided not to take it any further once they lost twice. I don't know if going to the Supreme Court of California would have gotten a different result or not. It just seems kind of odd that this opens the door for pretty much anybody if you want to run for two or more different positions, that you can ignore the stipulation in the elections handbook that says you can only run for one position at any given time, and that once the window has closed for either staying in that race or leaving that race is gone, that you cannot then abandon that campaign and go work on another one. So that's what got thrown out the window. And it seems that since that got thrown out the window, maybe they should have thrown out the window the idea that you could only be a write-in candidate for the 32nd District Assembly for the state of California, because what it meant was that since Vince was the only one that had qualified for that, because no one was going to run against him, that the only way to really become a part of that race was for you to become a write-in candidate. Being a write-in candidate means you actually do have to do more than just tell your friends and neighbors, hey, write me in. You know, at any given time when we have a presidential election, there are probably a couple hundred different people or things that get votes. But unless you're a qualified write-in candidate, they don't get counted anyway. So you could come along and somebody gets in real, real trouble and it doesn't look good, like Adam Schiffhead. And let's say no one was running against him. You'd think, oh, if I just get enough people running to write my name down, maybe I'll win it. It doesn't work that way. You have to actually become a qualified write-in candidate. Yeah, I know it doesn't really make a lot of sense, and I agree with you. But, because, I mean, if it's the people's choice to choose somebody, then why do they have to go get paperwork done to be a write-in candidate? But anyway, that's an aside. So there were several people who put their names in as write-in candidates, and we had one of those people, maybe one or two of them, come on this program because I thought they would be much better choices than the other people that had put their names in. But one of the people who put their name in is Ken Weir. I worked with Ken when I was on the city council. I've known Ken for a long time because I knew of him, and we had conversations before everyone on the city council. He and I did not see eye to eye on a lot of different things when I was on the city council. You know, I'm extremely conservative, and he's not. So he was in favor of spending lots of money and doing anything that Bill Thomas wanted him to do in terms of the Centennial Corridor and all of the trip projects. And I just felt that we were wasting a lot of money and creating a lot of headaches for a lot of people. And it could have been done very simply and a lot less expensive. But there were other things that Ken and I did not agree with. And every time I came up with something that I thought was going to move us forward, I had one plan where I wanted to put one-way streets in the downtown area in a circular pattern. So that, I mean, you could get to everything you needed to get to, but it would take, like, one of the best examples is H Street. H Street is not wide enough to actually have four lanes. It just isn't. I mean, why there aren't more accidents on that street is beyond me. But when you look at the width of the lanes, it has to be a certain amount, and it's the minimum on that street. Well, if you made H Street a one-way street, gosh, you know, you wouldn't have any problems anymore, right? If you made F Street a one-way street, you then would be able to decrease the amount of time people are there to make right and left-hand turns onto either 23rd or 24th Street. And you could have the flow of traffic going on 23rd and 24th, have longer periods of time before they would get a yellow and then red light. And the same is true in the way that I had structured it. Well, surprise, surprise, Ken wasn't in favor of that. I mean, he wasn't even willing to listen to it. But he was able to get Alan Tandy to give it at least a viewing. At that time, the person who was in charge and gave the presentation gave a presentation that really did not reflect my ideas and what I was talking about. But it, in a time when almost every downtown area of a major metropolitan city uses one-way streets to their benefit, that was rejected, would have saved a lot of time, a lot of money for people. But anyway, Ken and I have not seen eye to eye. So because of my experience and my observation of what Ken has done since he's been on the city council, he is also the chairman of the Kern County Central Committee for the GOP. I would not want to see him become I personally would not like to see him become our assembly member in the 32nd district. And the way to get back, I mean, if he wants to run for it, then run against other candidates. Do a real campaign, run a real election, and let's get some representation that everybody agrees is what we want. And so I think the only way to do that is for everybody to vote for Vince Fong for this 32nd district as well as for the 20th, if you want. And then once he wins both positions, he would have to resign from the 32nd district. When he resigns, that just opens up the door for a new election. And I think that they would probably put it together pretty quickly. I mean, yeah, we're talking about it costing the county or the city. No, that would be county. Yeah, it would cost some money to redo the election, but that's what you get when people don't follow the rules. That is, if anything, you got to point the finger at the people who made the decision that's what they wanted to do in the first place. So, he would resign, and then the election process starts over again. You'd have a primary where anybody who wants to run for it would pull papers and fill it out, and we'd go through a primary system where we'd pick the top two people, and then they would square off in a general election for that position. At least that's the way I understand it, and that's the way it's been done in the past. So that's what you'd be facing. That's what you'd be facing, and I think it's a good way to go. That's what my plans are to do, is to vote for Vince. Some of the other ones on here, we had Zach Bashutash, Ward 6. He was on our program, and I like him. I think he's got a lot to learn, and hopefully he'll start listening to more than one voice, or at least other voices, and taking the advice of people who have been there and done it. I think he's got the potential of doing a good job, but who knows? Who knows? We'll kind of have to find that out. We look at Kern Community College, District Number 4, and District Number 4 is Danny Diaz. We had Danny on, and I was impressed with Danny. I like everything that he had to say, and that's a definite recommendation. Something that I would do if I were in that area, but I'm not. We've gone over the Kern County Board of Education. There's actually 4 of them up. This one only has 2 that they're recommending, which again, it comes back to, well, what is it that somebody has to do in order to get to the Republican? This is the Young Republicans. What are those called? Young Republicans, Kern County Young Republicans Slate Mailer Committee, and it pretty much mirrors what Kathy Abernathy puts out. So, Kay Meek for Kern Community College, that one I agree with. Let's see, who else? What else? We've gone over Board of Education. We did Danny Diaz. Oh, Kern High School District. In the second district, we had Otilia Curiel on the program, and I thought Otilia has really improved, and she's really got her, you know, what together. And again, this is one that would be in opposition to the recommendation from the Kern Young Republicans, Kern County Young Republicans. The one that they don't say anything about is number 3, and number 3 is Penny Lepisto, and I think that she would do a great job. We had her on. Let's see, who else have they got on here? Oh, Bakersfield City School District. In the number 1, it's got, you know, it's pretty crowded. We had Brandon Holiday on, and I like Brandon. I've not talked to Michael Eckert, and he's not contacted us to see if he could get on, but that's their recommendation. The other ones, I don't know that I really have much of a input. Donald Trump and J.D. Vance were president, vice president. Steve Garvey, even though I think Steve's going to lose, and if Trump gets in, that might be what we all want to have happen anyway. I just love to see Schiff be taken to the cleaners by the DOJ. Oh, excuse me, Mr. Schiff, but you have violated the law. As a matter of fact, could you tell us, where do you live? Because we have documentation that you spend most of your time in Virginia living at your house. You spent 4 days living in Burbank, and you spent 200 days living in Virginia. And I think we can probably get a jury of your peers to agree that there's something wrong with that. Anyway, we're going to take a break. When we come back, got a pretty good article talking about the voting of the elites. They're actually it's from Rasmussen, and it's fascinating because now you understand how these people think and why they are so disconnected, and you have to wonder, what are we thinking to vote them in? But anyway, we'll be back. So this is a article by Andy Caldwell, and it was in Santa Barbara Current, and I would recommend everybody to take a look at it. I'm going to go through a bit of it. It's a remarkable survey was conducted by pollster Scott Rasmussen and reviewed in an article by the Heritage Foundation, Jarrett Stepman. The poll is now being referred to as the Elite 1%. It discovered and measured the enormous gulf between America's ruling elite and the average citizen on a variety of issues, and the results were nothing less than appalling. The ruling elite in this poll typically had postgraduate degrees, lived in densely populated urban areas, and earned more than $150,000 per year. A few of the more important things. Well, but let's before I go further, $150,000 per year. Now, the concept is, those must be the corporate people, the rich farmers, the this, the that. if you were to pull up the salaries of all of the people who work for the government in the school systems, in the city council, in the county, do you realize how many people that is that make more than $150,000 a year? It's a huge number. As a matter of fact, I'm going to guess that that number is much larger than the number of corporate and rich people. Put it this way. I think that there are more people on the inside the public arena that make more than 150 in Kern County than there are people who are on the private to make that kind of money. Let me let that sink into everybody. Because it does explain a little bit about what the rest of this survey finds. Because it's definitely weighted towards people who are already working for the government versus people who don't work for the government and are out there trying to scratch out a living. Let me start with this paragraph again. The ruling elite in this poll typically had postgraduate degrees, lived in densely populated urban areas, and earned more than $150,000 per year. A few of the more important things they had in common included very favorable opinions of university professors. Oh gosh, they'd be included in that elitist, huh? Lawyers, union leaders, journalists. There aren't any journalists around here that make that kind of money, and members of Congress. The elite 1% were more socially liberal and were less likely to trust citizens to govern themselves. That sounds familiar. They were comfortable with censorship and regulating the lives of ordinary people. Does that sound familiar to everybody? 72% of the elite would prefer to live where the guns are outlawed, while 77% would ban private ownership of firearms completely. Completely. You can't do that. We're only going to let the bad guys and the cops have guns. What's worse is that the elite were okay with rigging the system to ensure they stay in power. That is the total definition of California today. They have rigged the system to ensure they're in power. They are not interested in democracy, everybody. They're not. They're not interested in following the Constitution, either of the United States or the state of California. They are simply interested in ensuring that they stay in power, whatever that takes. But he says, specifically among the politically active elite, 69% would want their team to cheat rather than accept voters' decisions. And this explains so much. Not only are these people dishonest, but they are also deluded. Some 82% of politically active elites think most voters agree with them on important issues. So you see, they don't see that they're doing anything right. They are representing us. And the irony of that is this. Take Kamala Harris, for example. Now, she says that she, you know, her principles haven't changed. What she really believes hasn't changed. Yet she has shifted from saying she was against fracking to, yeah, it's okay now, to from we're going to give people in jail a transition surgery to, well, maybe not. And the reason that they want her to say maybe not and become more centrist is, look, they know what the average American wants. They know that we lean to the right, a little bit conservative. And some of us very conservative. They already know what it takes, what we want. So they're going to try and convince you that the person you're voting for is going to give you what you want, regardless of what their past history is, because their past history should predict what their future is and your future. Which would lead you to say, well, nobody should vote for Kamala Harris because we know what her past has been, and it hasn't been good. But they're going to convince enough people that, oh, no, Kamala Harris, she's changed. She's different. She's the wave of the future. She's the new leadership. She's the joy. And then once she gets in office, what do you think she's going to do? I mean, seriously, what do you think somebody like Kamala Harris is going to do. What has everybody done in the past that has told us one thing during the election and done something completely different after they get in there? Barack Obama is a great example of that. George Bush. All these things that they're going to do. You know, read my lips. No new taxes. And what do you do? He succumbed to giving it to more taxes. I mean, Barack Obama got a whole list of things that he said that, oh, yeah, that's not going to happen. And it did. So, again, it comes back to why is it so difficult for either side to find somebody, if they know what we want, why don't they give it to us? Why don't they give it to us? I mean, seriously, is it that difficult to figure out what it is that the American people really want on average and then deliver that? I think that, quite frankly, when you look at the history of Donald Trump in his 4 years, even with all of the pushback he got, with all the absence of any support, he delivered a lot of things that we wanted. And it shows you the people that were in Congress at that time, while they tell you that they are there to help you, that they're there to represent you and they're going to bring home and the kind of living, the kind of positive things that we all want, they didn't. They fought against it. And so we know exactly who these people are. But if they really know who we are already, because I'm a consultant, and I'm going to tell you, you can't say that. You can't say, you should move more this way. You should say, tell people this. You tell them that. And then once they get in, okay, my job's done. No, your job should be to make sure that all those things you told them that they needed to say is exactly what they do once they get there. But that's not the way that they play the game. That's why they are deluded into thinking that 82% of the people politically agree with them. Because once they get in, they're under the impression that, oh, didn't those people know that I was just lying? I was just telling them what they wanted to hear. That's not what I really believe. Look at my record. Look at my record. It tells you exactly who I am and what I believe. But, you know, just for the next 6 months, I'm going to tell you that I don't pay attention to who I was in the past because I've changed. This is the new Kamala Harris. So, as I say, it's pretty ironic that they in addition to that, really believe 82% of them politically active elites think that most voters agree with them on the important issues. And this is where we get to the things like the TRIP project. Do you remember voting on that? No, the people who are the elites like Bill Thomas and Alan Tandy and people that were here from Caltrans, you know, everybody agrees with us. I mean, if you would have had on the ballot, would you like to see the TRIP project, the Centennial Corridor go through and rip out 300 businesses and 300 to 400 businesses and homes, create a no viable way of getting to I-5 on a freeway? It's going to remain to be a two-laner, whatever we do, and cost us hundreds of millions of dollars? Or would you rather them go ahead and just widen 99, take it up to 7th Standard Road, make 7th Standard Road there a four-lane freeway out to I-5 and be kind of done with it for one-fourth the price? And I think if people were presented with that as an argument, as a choice, they would have said, just widen 99 and make a four-lane freeway at 7th Standard Road. Why are we ripping people's businesses out and homes and everything else that they've lived with? Why are we creating this? And they could have said, well, you know, as a bonus, what we can possibly do is plan on making a freeway that only serves the west side of the city to bring people into the downtown area and solve that problem also. All for half price. But oh no, these elites, they think that, you know, the decisions they're making, we're in agreement with them. Oh, these are smart people. Boy, they know what they're not politically motivated, are they? Of course not. Ironically, this poll was released simultaneously. Both Hillary Clinton and John Kerry unwittingly made statements validating the results. Clinton stated that without more regulation of misinformation she just agrees with, on social media, that's basically X, we will lose control. Meanwhile, Kerry called the First Amendment a major block to keeping people from believing the wrong things. I mean, we live in California. We don't have a lot of things we can do about it. But we do have an election. You've got your ballot. I've made some recommendations. We've gone over the candidates. Hopefully you've got enough information to make a wise decision. And as I cover a lot of these different things, I mean, the one that is common to everybody that's listening to me, unless you're outside of the state of California, is that on the propositions, the recommendation is to vote no on everything except for 34 and 36. Now, there is some argument that 34 should go the other way and that 35 should be a yes. But as I say, if you want to listen to the conversation that Steve Frank and I had, it's the most recent, not this past Friday, but the Friday before, he and I discussed them, and we discussed them in at length as to why they're positive or negative. So you can do that if you want to re-listen to that argument and decide for yourself. We got to take another break. We're going to be back.